Hello, and welcome to episode 12 of Post Game, SideQuest Patreon podcast, all about hot takes on cold games. I'm Melissa. I'm SideQuest editor-in-chief. I use she, her pronouns.
I'm Nassim. I'm SideQuest managing editor, and I use they, them pronouns.
And I'm Zora. I'm SideQuest assistant editor, and I use they, them pronouns. I'm also the copy ogre.
And Zora has to do this week's intro because they wrote half a joke. And not only do I struggle to read things written in Zora's voice because I do not use their voice, but this one was particularly baffling. So it has become Zora's entire responsibility.
Yeah. So I feel like there's an icy hot joke I can make here, but I can't quite get to it. We're talking about Final Fantasy X. Thank you. You're welcome.
There's hot places in Spira, and there are cold places in Spira.
It's true. And the only two spells I ever used with Lulu were Blizzaga, whatever, or Fyra, whatever. Anyway, I used those two.
Yeah. So really, it makes sense if you really think
about
it.
In the tail end of the game, every single enemy is weak to fire, and it's so weird. It's ice or fire, nothing else, because the only things that are weak to thunder are the machines. And if you're not stealing from the machines to kill them in one hit, what are you even doing?
Yeah, that's truly true. Truly. Steal and mug to half your team, and there you go.
Man, we're in it. We're already in it. Let's talk about some Final Fantasy X shit.
So Final Fantasy X, if you have been a long time reader of SideQuest, or back when we were the WWAC game section, one of my first articles for the site was about Final Fantasy X, and I've written at least two more since then, because that's who I am as a person. I guess one of them wasn't entirely about Final Fantasy X, it was just about Final Fantasy in general. But Nassim, you also played... I played Final Fantasy X when I was in high school, and it was my first game without being my first game. Mm-hmm. We've already had that discussion. But I'm curious, Nassim, when did you first play Final Fantasy X?
I first played a few years ago. I'm pretty sure I had already moved to Reno by that point, so maybe around 2017. I played a lot of video games that year for the first time because I was unemployed. I had quit my PhD program, and I didn't have any friends in Reno. So I'm pretty sure that's when I played it the first time. It was not my first Final Fantasy, but... yeah, it was. I know it was for sure after I read Nola's piece on Final Fantasy, because I edited that one on 10, and I was like, I don't know what's going on.
That piece is so good.
It's a great piece. I love that piece so much. So yeah, and then I replayed it for the purposes of this podcast. So,
and Zora, I feel like as an editor at SideQuest, you've had this game hyped to death.
I've had this game hyped to death and back, and it lived up to some of it.
Oh no.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, so I played it last week. No, I didn't play it last week. Thank fucking God I'm free. But I played it very, very slowly, pretty much over the course of 10 months, culminating in me just fucking giving up and watching the last 2 hours of cutscenes on YouTube.
That's fair. I didn't redo the final bass battle because I was like, this is too much.
I want you all to understand that
it's like 8 years long.
It took me no fewer than 10 months to play Final Fantasy X, and we were like, we're gonna record this podcast, and Nassim replayed it in like a month, and I'm like, all right. Fine, I guess.
To be fair, I used a walkthrough this time.
I started using a walkthrough, did not meaningfully speed up my play.
I replayed it my last year of college. Like, I started replaying it, which was a long ass time ago. And I got to, is it Mount Gagazet? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I got there. I got to the Seymour boss battle there, and I said, fuck this, and stopped playing for like 5 years. And then finally came back to it. Was like, why did I leave off here? Played through that part. And I was like, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Then I did manage to go through and beat the rest of it, and I cried again because I'm a baby.
I'm gonna be honest. Okay, so first off, shout out to this incredible movie like compilation that I watched. It's Dansg's 08's Final Fantasy X movie edit. It's Dansg 08. It's incredibly edited. It's like all of the cutscenes and just enough gameplay that you like get the vibe. Super engaging. Yeah. Makes me think I should have just watched the 11-hour movie and not tried to play the video game.
Do they have one for 10-2? Because the writing in 10-2 has made me put it down. So I was thinking about watching it.
I don't know if they have one for 10-2. But if they do, then I will consider playing 10-2. And by playing 10-2, I mean watching the movie edit. Because it's me and Final Fantasy X are donezo.
It's so funny because, like, I think this is, like, zooming out a little bit. I think that 10 got a bit of flack from like gamers for being so sentimental and its gameplay being like pretty repetitive and like not necessarily easy but certainly not difficult in terms of like the majority of the game. And then all of a sudden you'll fight a Seymour and it's like Jesus Christ.
Oh my god, fuck Seymour.
I actually really like that aspect of Final Fantasy X. I like that there's like tricks.
Mm-hmm.
To the boss battles, like if you know how to fight Seymour, that battle is like, and you have enough levels, but mostly like if you've figured out your like zombie handling technique, Seymour is easy peasy. Like it's not a challenge, it's fine, like you can do it. I don't know that it sped up my play, but it's not, it's like you can solve the battles.
Mm-hmm.
In Final Fantasy X in a way that I really appreciate. However, they're still long.
I think, well, yeah, no, I totally agree with like the criticisms of Final Fantasy X. It's certainly not a perfect game. But the thing I find really interesting is that Final Fantasy X-2, the writing is not as strong. But I think the gameplay is super fun and like way more engaging than it is in Final Fantasy X. They're kind of like inverses of one another. My favorite part of Final Fantasy X has always been the story. My favorite part of Final Fantasy X-2 is definitely the actual fun like of playing it.
Increasingly stressed about why, who, and how gave Yuna a gun.
Like, full disclosure, I think Yuna's growth into gun-wielding, treasure-hunting pop star is the raddest shit. Like, that is my...
Oh!
It's pretty amazing. It's amazing that it opens up with her singing a pop song. Like,
yes.
Oh,
I love the dress system too. I just understood
the counterweight season of Friends at the Table in a much deeper way. I suddenly there has been a missing piece and I'm there. Now. I was never like Arya Joy is a boring character. I was always like Arya Joy is absolutely sick of shit. But now that I know about Yuna, I'm like, okay, this makes sense to me.
That's so funny. We just did that like in a movie where we zoom in on your pupil and it expands and then like all of a sudden you're connecting dots and...
That is the exact moment that I just had.
Except it's a mashup of Friends at the Table and Final Fantasy X-2. Which really is just like the thesis of this podcast.
Truly. Anything that I do is a mashup of Friends at the Table and whatever the thing I'm doing is.
I love that. Yeah, I've never beaten Final Fantasy X-2. I probably will never beat Final Fantasy X-2. I watched The Perfect Ending this week just out of curiosity. And I didn't... hot take. I'm not going to spoil it, but I didn't like it. The thing I liked about the first game was... I love the emotion of the ending, and I don't want it to go away. Yeah. Sometimes I like a good sad, you know.
Yeah, I have several feelings about that.
I love to start a conversation with the ending.
Yeah, I think that that's the proper and correct way.
If it's not clear, this is a spoiler cast.
Oh yeah, you're gonna be spoiled for this game, baby. It is
20 years old.
It is 20 years old.
But if you're like me and somehow have avoided Final Fantasy X spoilers for the entirety of your earthly fucking life, welcome to here.
I will say, I honestly, you know, like you learn about Tidus, and then I thought everything was going to be fine in the end. I didn't think he was going to fucking disappear. I was like, wait,
really?
Wait, I know. I don't know. I'm like, why did I not think he was going to disappear as soon as the dream ended, exactly as it was foretold? I know. The first time I played, I was like, wait, he's just, wait, that wasn't supposed to happen. Gabe was like, really? Like, really? You didn't think that was going to happen?
So for people who, like me, also have avoided Final Fantasy spoilers for their entire earthly existence, and are still here listening to this, what Final Fantasy 10, does somebody else want to set this up, or do you want to hear me try?
I can do my best. I've had to explain it many times throughout my life, but I haven't played it recently.
I can fill in your gaps.
Okay, because if I do it, it's gonna be really weird. It's gonna sound like I'm explaining it to Mike, and I need you to know that the only thing that Mike knows about Final Fantasy X is that Auron fucked my dad. Still,
I think there's probably a threesome going on there. Auron also has a thing for.
Also, for some reason, loves Titus's mom. Auron has a lot of feelings and doesn't know what to do with them. It's anyway, true. We'll get back to Auron's sexuality later.
Okay, so here is my half remembered plot summary of Final Fantasy X, a game near and dear to my heart. You play primarily as Titus, who is a jock. He plays blitzball. And then the world ends. It's pretty traumatic. He wakes up in a new world called Spira, where he joins up with a gang of people escorting Yuna, who is a summoner, on her pilgrimage to destroy Sin, which is a big old thing that wipes out the world every 10 years or whatever, unless it's stopped. And we don't know how it stopped yet. We go on a big journey with Yuna, and we go to a bunch of different temples so she can learn to summon Aeons, which are, I assume, for the purpose of destroying sin, quote unquote. Other stuff happens. This dude Seymour, his name is Seymour Guado, which is really funny. And my favorite thing is whenever I'm playing Final Fantasy, to turn to my husband and be like, hey, you know why he's called that? Or you know why he moved to Guado Salam? And my husband's like, why? And I'm like, so he could see more Guado.
Wow.
And then he kicks me out of the house. That's not true. My husband's never played Final Fantasy X. So actually, he doesn't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
That's a very good pun.
Thank you. Anyway, Seymour is this real asshole who tries to forcibly marry Yuna, and that sucks. But everybody escapes, it's fine. And you go on this big pilgrimage, and in the end you find out actually God has been lying to everybody. And Yuna's supposed to sacrifice herself, and everybody's like, actually, fuck that. And then they fight God and kill God. And then it turns out that this entire time Titus has been a dream of the faith, which that's a heavy-handed name if I've ever heard one. And that means basically that here's where it falls apart for me. I don't remember exactly why he was a dream of the faith. What happened there?
So, a thousand years ago, there was a war between Xanarkin, which used machines or something, and some people who didn't like machines.
It was Bevel, which used machines.
Oh, Bevel and Xanarkin.
That was just vibing.
And the faith were like, I don't know what they were, but in order to preserve the memory of Xanarkin, which was going to be wiped out, they fell into a deep sleep and dreamt Xanarkin. So I guess Titus once existed is what my latest theory has been, that he used to actually be a person on Xanarkin. But yeah, a thousand years has passed, and so like the messages have been mixed up, and I could have sworn there was a whole thing more on the god Yuyevin, but when I rewatched the ending, you do not speak to him, and for some reason I remember you having a full ass conversation with him. But the first summoner, Yunaleska, of whom Yuna is named after. Oh man, I cannot believe I played this like 2 weeks ago and I don't even remember what she said. But she knows
it
that
is
all
complicated.
Die. Yeah, so summoners are supposed to sacrifice themselves to become the next sin.
It's because so it's everything's not, a cycle. It's not actually explained. She's just like, it has to happen. Maybe it is actually explained and I missed it because I was like lost in the fucking sauce at that point. but not of alcohol, just of the JRPG logic. like vortex.
Lost in the JRPG sauce.
I was like fully sober and I was still like, am I intoxicated? This is kind of how it feels when I was on like pain meds after surgery. Like, there's a distinct feeling of unreality. Every once in a while, the world sort of yawns away from me. Kind of grumpy. Anyway, yeah, so my understanding is that there's not really a good reason that summoners have to die. Maybe it's just because now they know what's true. Mm-hmm. And instead, their toil and their sacrifice is specifically to bring hope to the people of Spira.
Yeah,
and it's this cyclical problem where it's like we have this horrible enemy and these human sacrifices because the struggle against an enemy brings hope. And what would you do without hope in the face of an unkillable enemy? And it's like, well, if we didn't have the enemy, we would need neither the hope nor the sacrifices.
Yeah.
Because everybody would be able to live their lives. But it's yeah, I don't know. It's all Unalesca's several thousand year long power trip.
I think I was playing this around the same time that I was reading his Dark Materials. And the two kind of fuse in my mind as being a story of deception, like intentional deception for the purpose of power. So doing my best not to spoil his Dark Materials, this entirely unrelated piece of media. The two feel similar to me. I don't know if the evidence is there to support this or if it's just that I was very into both Final Fantasy X and his Dark Materials, but they feel thematically linked to me and that they are stories of deception by a powerful being for the purpose of controlling a population.
Yeah. I would agree with that distantly. I think His Dark Materials is much more invested in the deception. There's layers and layers and layers of it in His Dark Materials, whereas there are like several individual deceptions in Final Fantasy X, and one, you know, really, really big one, which is that Unalesca is a real piece of shit.
True.
But they're all like individual people making bad decisions as opposed to, or the ones that are emphasized are individual people making bad decisions as opposed to like a vast international otherworldly conspiracy, which it is.
Yeah.
But the micro deceptions had much more of an impact on me. Like Yuna not telling Tidus that she was going to die. Tidus not telling Yuna that he was going to fade into nothing. Yeah. Aron, for some reason, not telling anybody anything, even though it would have been really helpful for the whole goddamn story.
Okay, so I have the summary of what the history is. So it's supposed to be that Unalesca is like, okay, you have to choose one of your guardians. That guardian dies, become your final summon, and then you die by doing the final summon. It's unexplained why. But here is the history. It says, Yu Yevon is an ancient summoner hailing from the original Xanarkand of 1,000 years ago and Unalesca's father. When he saw Xanarkand doomed to be destroyed in the Machina War, he performed a summoning so immense that he lost his humanity. He transformed Xanarkand survivors into Faith and used their collective dream to summon Dream Xanarkand to preserve the city's memory forever. To ensure the continuation of the summoning, he clad himself in living armor made out of pyreflies it would collect from the atmosphere, which became known as the Monster Sin. Its purpose is to stop Spira's technological advance in Machina use and ensure Dream Xanarkand, which was summoned far out to sea, would never be discovered by mortals. Whenever a final Aeon pierces Yu Yemen's armor, he will possess the final Aeon and mold it into a new sin.
Okay, so it's actually another layer in this story about grief, right? Like we have to maintain Dream Xanarkand at all costs. And in maintaining Dream Xanarkand, we've created a cycle of death and grief.
It's rough.
Yes.
Yeah.
Profound.
I think that Final Fantasy's strength really does come from those moments of grief and the emphasis on the cycle.
I totally agree.
We had some scheduling stuff, so we didn't record last week, which we expected to. And I wrote a quarter of an article, but it's not the start or the end. And I'm not sure what the point is. But another unrelated note that's in the same document is about this cycle of summoning. Like, if you look at it just like focused on Yuna, she became a summoner because her father died as a summoner. Braska became a summoner because he spent his whole life working for peace. He was trying to like mend the kind of forever war between the Albed and Spira and Yevon. And then Sin killed his wife, and so he was like, well, gotta kill the big monster now, I guess. And so there's this like double or triple or more grief in Braska's story because he was a peacekeeper, and then he became, I mean, summoners aren't technically warriors, but their entire mission is to kill. And then his daughter, who he wanted to grow up safe, became this weapon in this kind of permanent religious deception, all in the service of the grief of a single powerful person for a nation that, though it's like, you know, genocide ain't good. Genocide is tremendously, incomprehensibly terrible. But to continue like mass death and suffering and stress for 1,000 years in only the memory of a civilization that has died is like extremely upsetting and sad and cruel.
I think that's what makes the ending work for me so well is the fact that it is deeply sad if you've like, you know, you spend fucking 2,000 years playing this game because it's so fucking long. Which, like, again, I love Final Fantasy X so much, but it's so goddamn long. You spend so much time with these characters, and you spend so much time with Titus, who is just the dingiest of ding-dongs. Like,
it's so true.
That boy's dumb as hell.
Yeah, like, I love him, but, like,
that boy is legitimately too stupid to understand that he's not the protagonist.
It's so true, though. Like, Gabe and I frequently quote, it's my story too, you know, to each other. Just because it's like, yeah, Titus, like, why do you think you're... I know for some reason Oren has told you are the main character. You are not the main character here, buddy.
That's
please.
Because Oren is also grieving for a mediocre man.
It's so true. Oh my god. Jack sucks.
Jack sucks so bad.
Jack fucking sucks.
Bad dad.
Like, even before I had, like, a really any kind of understanding of what was going on in the game, because, like I said, I first played it when I was a teenager. I might have been in, like, 9th grade or something like that. I didn't have a really deep understanding of what was going on in the game. There was a lot of things I liked about it that I had no words or way of articulating. But the ending is, I mean, in the endings, I don't know if we explicitly said what happens. Titus, as a dream of the faith, disappears. Yuna runs to hug him and he just disappears. He's not there anymore because with killing Yu Yevon and ending this cycle of destruction and grief, Yuna and the summoners, Yuna and her guardians also end the dream of the faith, which includes Titus. So he disappears. And it's deeply sad. Everybody's very sad. There's people are crying. I'm crying. It's very sad, but there's also that level of catharsis to it because because you have come to the end of the cycle, and in doing so, you have like destroyed, you know, a sense of stability and comfort that also results in the death, quote unquote, of a character that, while he may be the dingiest of ding dongs, like he's not a bad person, and I care about what happens to him because he's just a little guy with two brain cells to run to, rub together.
But it also feels like a really satisfying arc to Titus's plotline. And because of this, I really hate the post-credit scene.
Fair.
But it feels like a really, really satisfying end to Titus's plotline because his it's my story. it's partially, you know, the ego of a
17-year-old boy.
but partially it feels like it's armor. In a way, because Jekt was always like over, he was always living in Jekt's shadow. Because if you don't know, Jekt and Titus both play blitzball, the worst sport in human conception.
Professionally played.
They both professionally play blitzball. And Jekt is like number one blitzball star until he blips into the future and then becomes a giant hell monster.
As one does.
and so then, but and Jekt had always like, wanted to raise his son to also be a Blitzball star, but his way of doing that was to constantly neg him.
He's super just, abusive.
Just
like...
forever. And so Titus has this like really horrible relationship with his dad, but also loves this sport and also has the ego of a teen boy, but also has the I'm sure he has the self-confidence, like the self-confidence wounds of a teen who has been like constantly negged by his father for his whole life. And so him being like, it's my story, has always felt like armor against all of the trauma that the world was like laying upon him in watching his world be destroyed. And also constantly being compared to this man who he hates and who he feels hates him. Anyway, over the course of the game, especially in like the very last bit when he learns that he's this dream, it felt like he still couldn't figure out that the story wasn't about him. But realized that he needed to take actions that would serve not himself or his ego, but Yuna.
Mm-hmm.
And so him, Titus, like keeping the fact that he is this dream of the faith from Yuna until it's too late for her to change what she's been doing is a certain betrayal of trust, because you should be honest with the people you love.
Sure.
But also represents this incredibly powerful and quiet sacrifice. You know, he's a martyr, but he's not making a show of it. Mm-hmm. And that's very different than the Titus from the beginning of the game, who just wanted to be center stage.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I really like that for...
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't like the after credit scenes because Titus is back.
So before this, just on the note of the after credit scene, I don't remember that whatsoever, to the point that I had to check, like, is that part of the original? Because I originally played it for PlayStation 2. I was wondering if it was part of the remaster, and as far as I can tell, it's not. I was like, I think how I interpreted that was like essentially that his afterlife or whatever is him reawakening in wherever, and he's not really there, you know, like he's not physically there. That's just his personal version of the afterlife. That does change if you do play Final Fantasy X-2.
Yeah, that's the thing though. Like in my heart, Final Fantasy X is Yuna's story, told through the perspective of Titus. And so if you leave the game, if you let the game's final scenes be Yuna speaking to the people of Spira, telling them that they've entered a new age, they no longer have to live in fear all the time, but they do have to work together to rebuild, you know, her being the focus, her having the last word, I really like that story, because it mm-hmm. allows Yuna... narratively, like metatextually, it says this was Yuna's story.
Mm.
And her story hasn't ended. And I really, really like that. But Titus being in the after credit scene reverts us back to it being Titus's story, like metatextually.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
And I like the version of this game where it really is Yuna's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it can be two people's story or whatever, but but in a media landscape that is continuously, like, you know, devaluing the stories of women, incredibly competent, interesting, like multidimensional women in service of like cool boy protagonist,
that ding dong,
having it undercut by that final like shot of him in the water is disappointing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's fair.
And to bring in another unrelated piece of media, I think I have a tendency to just like erase from my memory things like that like epilogues that I don't like
that's
to
great.
The point. Congratulations to me on this skill, because I didn't know I had it. Apparently, like the last Hunger Games book, I don't know if I didn't read the epilogue. I had no memory of it. To the point where I saw the movie and I was like, what the fuck did they add all this for? I hate it. And then I think Mary, my friend, for people who don't listen to my other podcast, Vanky Girls, I think Mary was like, that was in the book. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. And then I look at the book and I'm like, how did I never read this?
Yeah, I hate that kind of vlog too.
So I think, I don't know if it, I truly don't know. Was it not in the PlayStation 2 version I played? It probably was. Did I skip the credit scene and miss it entirely? Quite possibly. Or did I just decide it wasn't there? That's also possible. It must have been there when I replayed it, though. And I'm guessing I just thought, oh, that's his afterlife where he's splashing around the water as he loves to do. He's just a little mermaid boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can all breathe. Why can three of them breathe underwater? I don't understand.
It's so funny. Nobody needs to. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I worried about it through the whole game. It stressed me out so much. Lulu's like, it's got to be you guys now. And I was like, why?
Yeah.
Only some people have gills. But they all have gill.
They do all have gill. Or only Titus has gill. Because I play Titus and I'm the one who controls all the money. Which seems like a really bad idea.
Of all the characters to be in control of the money, I feel like Titus is probably the worst. But like, I also would give it to Waka.
Mm-mm, oh my god.
No.
Lulu's clearly the brain cells around me.
Yeah.
I can't get over, oh man, I guess Zora, you might not know this, but another reason to maybe not play 10-2 is that Lulu and Waka get married and Lulu's pregnant.
I was so worried about that. Oh no.
Yeah. So, you know, from one brother to the other, which I hate that trope.
Yeah, you swap up. Trope. It's fine. It's just a trade. It's not weird. Whatever. Who wants to marry Waka? That dude's so racist.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's truly wild.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Waka needed some character growth.
Waka did have a touch of character growth.
He's the voice of Jake the dog and Bender. So
wait, really?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, incredible. Yep. No, okay, so I really liked how at the end of when you're fighting Unalesca, Lulu's like, yo, buddy, if you don't want to do this, it's time to fucking go. And Waka's like, eh, I'm here. That's my god. Like, he's been so devout through the whole game. He's like, you know, devout to the point of abject racism towards the Albed in a way that makes me want to like fucking shake him.
Fair.
It's awful, but I love that once he's in the situation where he's fighting like the most holy figure he's ever known, he's just like, all right, let's rumble. And thank God, because he's very important to me in that fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does apologize, but it's a very strange apology. And I think you can only get it if you talk to him before you go fight Sin. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. So.
Okay, well, they didn't do that.
Yeah. They didn't do it well. I mean, like, yeah, if you can have a conversation with him while he's in the bridge, whatever, ships, and he tells Sid, I'm sorry, which I'm like, well, why don't you tell Riku, who you've been, like, hanging out with and being racist again? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Instead of her southern-speaking father. I love him.
Sid?
Yeah. No, Sid.
Yes. I probably dropped the D there. Yeah, I'm curious, how did we all feel about the cast of characters, both in terms of like them as characters and then also mechanically? Because like, full disclosure,
Kimari,
I have no use for Kimari.
Oh my god.
Here's the problem. Also, as soon as I caught Yuna had a steal, I was like, Riku's dead to me.
Yeah, no, I remember the first time I played Riku was like way more useful to me. The second time I was like, we taught Waka Mug, so he became good once he learned Mug, and like have the other people learn Steel, and I'm like, I don't need. All right, Riku, sorry, you're not. Here's your use your Albed potions. You can become our new healer.
I want to love Riku. I want so desperately to love Riku, and I hate the people who wrote her. I'm so sorry, Final Fantasy X writers, if I'm besmirching your good names. But why is Riku like that?
So fair.
Riku's one of those people that I love in spite of her writing. I've just decided who Riku is, and I love her. And nothing the official writing says about Riku matters to me.
So the whole team has four brain cells.
They're all Lulus.
They're all Lulus. Occasionally Yuna gets one, Occasionally, yeah. Titus inexplicably gets one. Aron is frequently offered several, but denies them. He's like, I don't want this. I didn't watch the two loves of my life die to think. Like, oh,
he also ages inexplicably over 10 years, may I add. Like,
oh yeah, it was only
shouldn't he be frozen in time? Well, he should also be frozen in time theoretically, like Jekt is, but okay, say fine, he ages in 10 years, but he's like, he's supposed to be like 35. He looks like he's 50.
Maybe he aged while he was trying to go down the mountain.
I mean, at this point, sure.
Oh, Oren.
Anyway, I love Oren and that he makes almost exclusively bad decisions.
Yes.
My favorite character types are the ones who make only bad decisions or only like really reckless decisions, which means that Yuna and Oren are my faves. like far and away in this group.
Yes.
They rule every single time. Yuna is the main character of Final Fantasy X, and we know this because Yuna acts. Every other character is just like only reacting. Especially mm-hmm. Titus. Titus has no fucking clue what's going on at any given time. Mm-hmm. He's just bouncing through the meadowland, bouncing up this mountain. Like, oh, there's a pretty girl in a lake. Maybe I have feelings now, I guess.
Yeah.
He's vibing. He is existing 100% on vibes. Meanwhile, Yuna's like, I need to go on this long journey. To carry on the work of my father. I will die at the end of it, but it's very important that I do it. Oh, this fucked up dude with long nails seems to be doing bad things. I'm gonna see if I can marry him to get him to like fuck off.
Chill.
If that doesn't work, we're gonna straight up try to kill him. If that doesn't work, I'm gonna throw myself off the edge of this building to get away from him. Like, Yuna's amazing.
What I love about Yuna is that there's several times, like, people will, like, talk down to her, right? There's that one summoner, Donna, who's just like, oh, you're a little girl or whatever. And then Yuna, you know, like, the trope that I kept expecting and kept forgetting wasn't going to be fulfilled is, like, oh, this like, meek, mild girl who's trying to do her best or whatever, and she takes it. She's not a punching bag. She's, like, she, you know, just because she is kind and she's compassionate does not make, you know, she's, like, very much like, this doesn't make me weak, and I'm going to stand up for myself. And I love that about her. I love that she's constantly, like, no, this is like, I am compassionate and kind, and I see the best in other people. And that does not mean that you are better than I am or that you can step on me. And I love that about her. She's so good.
Yuna's amazing.
I love her.
I think I wrote about this when I wrote about Final Fantasy, and like, I think it was YI game, but I just love the fact that Yuna gets to be kind and compassionate and still gets to be the hero. And it's not because she healed the right person at the right moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is just about her compassion and her desire to do the right thing. And the fact that she gets to just have big old monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I know.
Fuck yeah. I love that.
I love her affection with them too. I'm like, yes, mm-hmm. my pets.
Yes. It's so cute every time she pets the little beak or sits on Ifrit or whatever. It's so good.
I'm going to be honest, it gets less cute the 600th time you've seen it.
Did you eventually turn off the long animation?
I did. They're not short enough. They're not short enough. This game would have been so much more fun for me if I could turn off all the animations in battle.
Mm-hmm.
Fair.
Yeah. There's some of the spells take for fucking ever to cast.
So long. And the fucking, like, what are they called? The little bastards, the fireballs that explode.
Yeah, I know
the enemies,
Their getting bigger animation takes legitimately, like, 30 seconds. Why?
Yeah, for a remaster, there's some things that I was like, you could have, like, why can't I skip cutscenes after I die? What are you talking about?
Oh, why haven't you added so many more save points?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
At least the sphere grid is better.
That's dark.
Did they change the sphere grid? I really like the sphere grid system, actually, but I didn't realize they changed it.
I think there's a different version that you can use either.
You're not starting in your starting positions necessarily version.
Yeah, it's something like that. It's been ages.
Every time I would pull the sphere grid up on the TV, Mike would have to look away.
It's pretty, it's a lot. I don't like it. as a mechanic,
yeah,
but also it sucks at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's so confusing.
It's hard to, it is hard to like navigate when you have to go on like a diagonal and the mouse.
Yeah,
and,
so
the mouse,
so for
the controller to watch too.
The uninitiated Final Fantasy's level up system, Final Fantasy X's level up system is basically like very, very, very long interconnected tracks of like level up enhancements, so moves, stat increases, etc. And every level you get like one something that lets you move like,
yeah,
one step
points,
in the grid,
APs, I think.
And that's great. I love a tracked interconnected level up system because that's how my brain is. What I don't love is when it's overlaid on a very visually busy backdrop that,
yeah,
inexplicably tilts back and forth when I press certain buttons. I don't know why it does that.
Oh.
And that you can't navigate on using the D-pad or the analog stick.
Yeah, you have to like back out or something.
Yeah.
And then you can move around. It's very weird.
It's messy.
Like, I started playing it with Mary because I wanted to do an episode on it for Fakey Girls, mm-hmm, at some point. And Mary just like this, when it's time to level up, Mary just fucking hands the controller to me.
Oh my god,
like, take over. I can't with this. Like, oh, it
incredible.
Is not, it is not the sphere grid in particular. I think the rest of the game actually is fairly approachable if you haven't played a lot of,
yeah,
JRPGs before. Like, it, the fact that it's turn-based and not like real-time combat, which is what happens in 10-2,
mm-hmm,
the fact that like there's a lot of tool to like the battle screen itself is confusing if you haven't played a JRPG before, which I hadn't when I started playing.
There are also a lot of just like hidden things.
Yes,
it's like impossible to find menus if you don't,
yes,
already know where they are.
Yes.
I didn't know you could guard for the longest time. Did you know that if you,
yeah,
press triangle, you guard?
Yes.
I learned that fighting Seymour on the mountain.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's like you can get the gist of the mechanics down, I think, fairly reasonably, even if you haven't played a lot of JRPGs before. But then you look at the sphere grid and you're like, I fucking quit. I quit. What am I supposed to do with this? It's just nonsense to look at.
Yeah.
I think mechanically, I really like it. I like the flexibility of it. I like the fact that I can go down different paths. I can like make this character do effectively whatever I want if I'm willing to spend the spheres to do it. But it sucks to look at. And,
mm-hmm,
I feel like I had to go the full 60 hours or whatever through the game before I could understand what I was doing with the sphere grid.
I do like that worst case scenario, you can just keep going forward and it's fine,
yeah,
except for Kamari, but it's okay because I stopped using Kamari.
Oh my god. This time we made Kamari another mage and
I did it too late.
Oh yeah, we knew from the beginning, we're like, he's fucking useless, so let's take him down the magic track. And that was very useful having three magic,
yeah,
users, but like, no, he was not. Like,
it was too late.
Kamari.
I have the problem where I feel bad if I neglect any of the characters.
Oh my god, me too.
My last playthrough, I was leveling up everyone, which made it take 85,000 years longer than normal because I'm like, oh, I gotta level up Kimari.
I was doing that until I stopped caring, mm-hmm, at which point it was Auron, Yuna, Titus, and Waka. That was my squad.
Flyers, yeah. Waka's like, it takes a while to level up his strength, but then he gets good.
Yeah.
It takes a while.
Yeah, but I got there for him, and then he was so strong.
Yeah.
It was like a switch flipped. Like, at one point,
yeah,
day one, he's garbage, and then, like, literally two levels later, he was, like, absolutely decimating fools.
I think when I first played, I loved Yuna a lot as a character, but I've never liked healing. I will never like healing. It is just not the kind of play that I like. So I've almost never used Yuna to the point that I don't think I've like play. I think my very first playthrough when I was a teenager, I like barely ever summoned Aeons.
Oh, I also barely ever summoned Aeons, but I did heal a lot, and I would have had to heal less if I just fucking summoned the bird.
I always felt like I should save that. Like, I don't know,
right?
Something I needed to save, but you don't. There's no,
yeah,
reason you have to.
Yeah. No, it's foolish. And it's actually even better if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. All right. I feel like we should move on to another focus question, but I don't actually have one. How does it resonate with our...
I can talk a little bit about that, because one of the things that I was thinking about... Yes. How does it resonate with our late 20s, early 30s brains? Oh, well, the thing that resonated with me regarding that was Oren's specific lines, this is not your world. And then I think, like, as he's dying, this is your world now.
Mm-hmm.
I think about those lines a lot, which I think is actually the title of Nola's piece too, The World Is Not Yours. Mm-hmm. Because it comes in context with, like, he tells Titus, like, this is your story at the very beginning when he's, like, pulling him up from Samarkand being destroyed in the dream or whatever. And he says it to Titus when Titus is in Spira, like, this is not your world. And then, yeah, again, as he dies, like, this is your world now, like, you've come full circle mm-hmm. or whatever. And something about, so I'm turning 30 in, like, 3 weeks, and I have a lot of conflicted feelings about this. And I've just graduated from my second master's, and I'm not planning on going back to school. And we're still in a pandemic. Currently, you know, Nevada and California are on fire. Like, I can't go outside because it's so smoky. And there is something about being in this, like, climate, getting towards apocalyptic world in the middle of a pandemic as I am aging another decade that I didn't even know I would reach. And hearing the words, like, whether this world is mine, whether this world is not mine, it just gives me a lot of feelings that I'm not sure how to process. So that's what I wanted to say about that. There's mm-hmm. There's my 3 cents.
It's interesting how like it ages with you, like how that statement can change as you get older, especially if you played it when you were younger, which you played it when you were younger, but not as a teenager, right?
Right. I mean, it was only oh my God, at this point, I guess it was like 4 or 5 years ago, but I was in such a different place emotionally at that point. And the world did not feel, the Trump presidency had just started. So the world was still a dumpster fire. And it was, you know, even before that has been a dumpster fire. But I think I've just changed so much in the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. And the world has, and my understanding, or maybe I should say my understanding of the world has also really changed a lot. That even in this short period of time, it just, yeah, it feels very, very different to me.
Mm-hmm.
That one's really interesting because it's so hard for me to remove it from, like, the very literal sense that it's mm-hmm. uttered in the game.
Sure.
Like, because Auron secretly knows everything. And so when he says the world is not yours, he's like, no, it literally, it isn't yours. It's the plaything of this cruel goddess. And then the sea change is very much that, you know, they've killed the cruel goddess and also the big, the cutest demon, the cutest big bad. He looks like a capybara or a tardigrade. It's anyway, Sin is a big old plushie. But they've killed it, which means that they do actually have meaningful control over the world, which is very resonant to me. But every time I try to apply it to my life, I'm like, well, I'm still one of 7 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, certainly, yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, like, I understand the actual context of it, but this, I don't know, our world is fucked up. Our world has always been, like, our physical, actual, our reality mm-hmm. world has always been fucked up. Mm-hmm. And something about and it doesn't feel like I never feel like I'm in control. I hardly feel like I'm in control of my own life half the time, just because there is I mean, how do you feel in control of your life when, like, for a year we've been in lockdown and people are going out and I mean, I'm this is probably the case everywhere, but, like, in Reno, 95% of the people aren't wearing masks, right? And it makes me feel so, I mean, we're getting new cases, like the new variant is in Nevada, and it makes me, it's, everything is out of our control. I feel, and now I'm not even in school anymore. So it's like the one thing that I was doing, I'm like, now you're out on your own, kid. And it feels very overwhelming. But he kind of, I mean, this is your world now. And I don't want to say it's hopeful, but in a sense, it's kind of like an acknowledgement of, like, yeah, this is what it's like. So you got to do what you have to do.
I mean, mm-hmm. it's both hopeful and it's a responsibility. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It gives ownership to the new generation in a way that I think it's really important for to apply it to our world in a way that I think it is really important for our generation to take ownership. And I'm talking specifically about, you know, late 20s to late 30 year olds, the millennials. because we're not the kids that the media portrays us to be frequently, and also mm-hmm. that I think a lot of our generation still sort of feels like. We're people who are ending up, we're gaining positions of power, and even if we're not gaining them institutionally, we have them in relationships now with younger generations. And so even if it doesn't feel like our world, we need to take ownership of it if we ever want it to, if we ever want it to feel like our world. It's not going to be given to us.
Yeah. The sentiment that, when I played this as a teenager, I didn't have the language or the brain capability to like understand why this kind of thing mattered to me. But the idea that the story is essentially about a group of people doing what they think is right against totally unfathomable odds against them, and succeeding despite that and still having grief and loss, but also changing the world potentially for the better, but not knowing for certain because you can't see the future. That resonated with me then, the idea that eventually there was the potential for something different. And it still resonates with me now. Even though, like I said, I didn't really have the language for it then. And it's something that I struggle with, you know, as a 32-year-old in this particular world. It's very easy to slip into like a doomer mentality. Also, specifically for me, my brain just loves that fucking slide at the playground, just straight down. So, you know, as corny as it might feel to other people, this sentiment still does resonate with me really strongly. And it's one of those things where, like, not everybody needs this reassurance, but fuck, I do. So, like, even at 32, I'm still like, that's right. That's right. It is. And you know, again, it's not something that's going to work for everybody in every circumstance, but like, so, like, I fucking need that reassurance sometimes that, like, yes, working together to do the best that you can is a worthwhile cause, even if you can't solve every single problem. Like, that still resonates with me.
I like that.
Yeah.
Another, I am curious about your thoughts on, like, I know the length did not work for you, Sora. But I am curious, like, did the story work for you on some level? I assume on some levels, not on others, but I'm curious about, like, do you think it was worth it to play it?
That long pause.
No, I honestly, I don't think that playing it was worth it to me, because experiencing it was, but the act of playing the game, like, I simply do not have 75 hours. Like, the 75 hours it would have taken me to complete that game to spend hitting the X button once every 45 seconds.
That is extremely fair. Yeah.
I'm not, and like the story, I actually really did like the story when, like, watching the last 2 hours of cutscenes via this movie edit was the best time I had with the game. And I had a really good time with it. Like, I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it, like, brought the story together really, really well. It felt like a really satisfying culmination to the main character's arcs, as much as I was screaming at Auron for, like, not telling anyone anything ever. My dude, please, come on. But the gameplay of the game itself was so miserable to me as a 26-year-old person who needs to spend time doing other things. That it, like, I'm not doing it again. I, like, breathed a sigh of relief when I realized I couldn't possibly finish the game in time. I was like, thank fucking God, I don't have to sit through these goddamn fight animations anymore. And it's not that I, like, don't have time to put 70 hours into a game. It's just I don't have time to put 70 hours into a game where most of the time I'm literally just sitting on my ass staring at a screen waiting for an animation that I, like, already have memorized to finish. But if I had been in high school playing this game, if I had been in middle school playing this game, I think I would have had a great time. I think I would have loved it. but just like the place I'm at in my life as like an adult with a 40-hour a week job, and you know, I do the side quest work, I do self-publishing stuff, I like to cook, and I have to make sure that my human form and also my residence are not squalid. And the time when I'm not doing all of those things, I want to not be battling my own attention span.
Mm-hmm.
And Final Fantasy X was simply not a game that allowed me to like chill out. It was like a constant battle between like getting distracted by my phone or anything else and remembering to do the next like 3-step input to get Tidus to like attack the enemy or Lulu to cast a spell or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think the story, like, I love the basic arc of the story, but I do think the story too is bloated.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I also like, listen, those last 2 hours fucking ruled, but there was a lot in the earlier that,
The two places I remember most feeling like, why the fuck are we doing this, are the Calm Lands,
yeah,
which just feel like they drag on for,
yep,
ever.
Yeah.
And I think Makalania as well. It may just be that I just hate Makalania.
Makalania sucks.
Which one's Makalania?
The woods.
That's the woods, right?
Oh my god. Yeah, yeah, you're in those, yeah, woods forever.
Yeah. Those two sec. Oh, and like the thunder planes.
Thunder planes. Dodge it 100 times. Get this one little thing, yeah, that you still need another thing in order to do the third thing.
Final Fantasy X does this incredible thing that I don't understand. It feels like witchcraft, where each area, feels like you've been in it for ages and ages and ages.
That's so true.
And then you think about what's actually happened in it, and nothing has happened. Like, you've been there for like 2 minutes, not human minutes, like narrative minutes.
Yeah,
you've been there for moments, and it's like, why did you make me fight so many battles that didn't mean anything? Mm-hmm. And I think this also speaks to like game design philosophy that has changed, but maybe it doesn't. Maybe I just don't play that kind of art JRPG anymore.
I really hate random battles, and not having repels or repel equivalents drives me up a wall.
There were repel equivalents, actually. I don't remember what they're called, and they were expensive.
Well, I did not have them, so I didn't do, like, you know, I'm usually a completionist, but I did not do any, like, hardly any side quests this time around. I did quite a few of them before I was like, oh, I have to play Blitzball in order to get Waka Celestial Weapon. We are done doing Celestial Weapon quests.
I do not even know what the side quests are.
You're not missing out.
I was so desperate to finish this goddamn game.
It's a shame, because I think that if they, like, really, if they remade this game and put some time, which, you know, obviously this takes time, money, and resources. Like, I understand this.
Yeah.
But it could be so excellent if they just were like, all right, how can we update this game?
I want to play the 20-hour-long Final Fantasy X remake.
Yeah.
I would play that in an instant. But it needs to be 20 hours long, and like, you wouldn't even have to cut out any story. You would just several hours of animation. Like, literally 20 to 30 hours of animation. And, like, several battles.
This is one of those pieces of media that is, like, I want to share with people who I care about, because I'm, like,
mm-hmm,
like, you know, this mattered to me a lot when I was younger, and so I want to share it with people. But it is not the kind of thing that I can just be like, hey, husband, play this long-ass game where nothing happens through, like, 40% of it, and you have to watch the same animation over and over and over again. It is perfect for playing alongside my best friend, because we just sit and chat through all the boring bits, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
But it is not something that it is easy to just be like, you should play this because it's I love it, but it's also kind of a mess. When I play it and I have the nostalgic connection to it from when I was a teenager, I remember the time, like, even the boring bits. For example, I remember the time that we were, like, parked on Mihen High Road or whatever. Or maybe those are two different places. It's been a while. And my friend and I left the game not paused, because that's a thing you can do in this game.
Mm-hmm.
We just left it there, left the house, went to the movies, came back, finally did something. And from upstairs, we hear her brother's friend go, oh, thank God, I've been listening to that music for 4 hours. Like, so even these boring, repetitive bits, I have like fond memories of. I remember, and like, this was like one of the reasons that this game was like really important to me. And I talked about this in one of the articles that I wrote, was that this was the first game I had where the story grabbed me as intently or as intensely as like books did, which was like my main, this was the first game I played that had that kind of intensity of story. And I didn't know games could be like that. So this was like a real shifting moment for me in terms of like what I thought about games. And so I have like all of these very fond memories. So when I replay Final Fantasy X, I'm not playing through the game. I'm also playing through all of the associated memories I have of it. Other people don't have that. And I can't give it to them.
So I know I keep plugging this movie edit. It's so good. I recommend you just hand Josh that and go enjoy.
Yeah. Enjoy. I think he watched me play a good chunk of Final Fantasy X when the remaster came out. I really do need to play more of X too, because I can just throw shoes at people as a weapon, and I think that's great.
The dress system is awesome. Like, it's so cool.
The gameplay in X-2 is really good, in my opinion, and it feels like a fun popcorn flick after like the seriousness of Final Fantasy X. Narratively, is it good? Not really to me. I still enjoy it, but I enjoy it in the way that you might enjoy an AU fanfic.
Like, I see.
Like, what if Yuna was a pop star treasure hunter? Sure, I'll click that. Yes. Tell me about if Yuna was a pop star treasure hunter. That's appealing to me, but like as an actual continuation, you know.
There's like an incredible like political world building story that happens after Final Fantasy X that I would read 15 volumes of. Mm-hmm. Like I would read that manga. I would read 100 chapters of that.
Yes.
Sign me up. Assuming that it's, you know, written well at all, which I don't really trust Final Fantasy manga to be.
Yeah. Fair. Apparently there's a Final Fantasy X-3 like,
oh, I keep hearing
audiobook
about
that. Something.
Oh.
It's some kind of additional media that's apparently god awful.
Well, if they ever decide to make X-3 as a game, let us hope it's not that then.
I'll be there. It doesn't matter. If Final Fantasy X-3 happens and it's the worst reviewed game on earth, I will still be there. Like, I've got it. I'm playing it. I'm crying. I'm not proud, but I am.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm returning back to the if is it worth it conversation, because it's I feel so conflicted about it, because I can't express how much I enjoyed the final 2 hours of cutscene that I watched. I actually watched it on 1.5 speed, because even the cutscenes are too slow.
Especially Yuna's speech.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Anytime so Yuna slow. Talks.
But like, I really, really, really enjoyed that. And it really did. It made me, the two moments that I had where I was like, oh, okay, this is Final Fantasy X, this is why people love it, were the scene in the woods where they make out for perhaps too long. But also where I can see Tidus being like becoming anchored in this world, where he's like, oh, I actually like have this genuine human connection, and I'm gonna have to start like actually making hard decisions. if I want to not just like let this story end how it seems to be ending, which is with her death, and the final reveal to conclusion of the Unalesca's like deception stuff, so the cutscenes that I watched in movie mode.
So was the 11 hour movie version worth it?
The 2 hours of it that I watched were, yes, absolutely.
Sweet.
Like, I wish, I genuinely wish that I had just watched the movie from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would have been, and I mean, it's got all the JRPG, like, bullshit problems, which is that the translation's a little weird and the voice acting's a lot weird. And I think that those two things have to do with each other, but I haven't really looked into it. And also they do JRPG logic, which is like they'll say something and then they'll say something completely separated, like unrelated. And then all of the characters will be like, that makes perfect sense. Let's go to the next town now. And I'm like, what? Didn't 20 people just die? Like, but it's okay because now we're going under the ocean. And I'm like, what? Most of you can't breathe there, and the three that can, I still don't understand. But it's like that's, you know, part and parcel with playing a JRPG. And the conclusion really was worth it. It's just the play that wasn't.
Yeah. As an ardent Final Fantasy X fan, that is a totally legitimate opinion that I would agree with, I'm sure. Did I not have fond memories associated with all 75,000 hours of that game?
Yeah.
No, I wish I had played it when I had 75,000 hours to spend on it. Because I would have put, you know, several hundred into it. I put several hundred into Tales of Symphonia. No individual save file, because I was really bad at that game and I kept restarting. But, like, I probably put 300 hours into Tales of Symphonia. Mm-hmm. Which is a lot for me, no matter what.
Yeah.
And I just don't have that anymore.
Yeah, no, it's rough. Hard to come by that many hours in the day when you're not a teenager. This game has like so many, there are so, like just the music from this game like shoots me back to
I listen to teenagerhood all the time. It's a great soundtrack.
One time I was in the student building at my college, and I was like just there doing homework, and all of a sudden somebody starts fucking playing To Xanarkand on the piano.
Get wrecked.
And I was like, I have to leave. I'm trying to do homework in here. I can't be crying. Like, come on. Come on. Some of us are trying to fucking work in here.
Oh my god.
It was a beautiful moment though.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I'll have to check out that 11.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I have that with Tales of Symphonia music. You can play the I don't remember any of the town names, but you can play the starting town music and I will immediately like be in my feelings.
I love that. What an experience to have. And that's Tsuteki. I think someone at Kotaku just wrote something about they referred to it as a sex scene. I did not interpret it that way as a teenager.
Whoa.
The scene in Makalania.
No.
I would not have interpreted that as a sex scene either. I think they were just swimming underwater. That's magical.
Yeah, I thought they were just kissing under there.
I really do feel that they were just necking.
Yeah, that's how I always sound about it.
I know it makes me sound like I'm 70 years old if I call it necking. but I feel that that's the appropriate word to describe what they were doing.
Yeah, that's how I always interpreted it. I was like, oh, they're just kissing under there. Because, like, I don't know. There's something about their romance in particular that is, like, so chaste.
Yeah.
It's it feels like childish.
Yeah, no, yeah. No, I totally agree.
In a way that I don't want to use that to
childlike.
I don't know which of those I actually mean. Okay. I'm not willing to say I don't mean childish. But I don't want to say that in a demeaning way. Like, it feels very innocent. It feels like it's not in spite of the situation that they're in, but completely disregarding of it, you know, like,
yeah.
Like it's not a spiteful romance.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something really appealing to me about it being a very innocent example of first love.
Yeah.
That like isn't consummated. Like there's something really appealing to me about that. I'm sure in part because I did play it as a teenager who was just like, please no, do not interact with sex. but also I find that scene just really like really sweet and charming in a way that like is not sexual to me, which like, you know, room for interpretation there, you do you, but like I personally really like it as just this like magical, like, because it doesn't feel real, like like there's nothing about it that feels real to me, like,
yeah,
in the real events of Final Fantasy X, I don't imagine that we see them underwater for like fully 3 minutes swimming around each other and mooning over each other, rather. Mooning at is different. to be clear about the content of that scene, they are not mooning one another. They are mooning over one another. But there's something really sweet to me that works for both of their characters that is like so, I mean, they feel very, like, I think that's part of the tragedy of it is they both feel really like kids, even though they're not like babies or anything. They feel young.
Part of the bittersweetness about Titus is that he never gets to be an adult.
Yeah.
I don't think he makes adult decisions in the end.
No.
No, he absolutely does not.
Like, but I don't want to say that, like, again, I don't want to say that in a demeaning way. He makes hard decisions, but he makes them with the air of a child, and not necessarily like a 10-year-old, just like, you know, somebody who has not yet reached adulthood. He does it with this like childish determination.
It honestly reminds me a lot of another major childhood touchstone, Animorphs.
Oh my god.
Like, I'm sorry, I'm always fucking here to talk about Animorphs. I love Animorphs so much. But anyway, for real though, like, in Animorphs, they never don't feel like kids to me. They feel like kids having to make these awful, awful, awful decisions. And that is also how Titus and Yuna feel to me. Like, they are kids having to deal with adult problems and make adult decisions.
I think the sort of a tragedy to Titus's story is that he never reaches adulthood. Mm-hmm. But I think a beauty of Yuna's is that she does.
Mm-hmm.
In that last, like, her stepping up and making that speech is her becoming an adult, and starting to be able to engage with the world in a more complex way than good and bad, black and white, you know, heroism or villainy. And I that's me, like, adding a read onto that scene for sure. But, like, you know, the leadership is traditionally an adult role, and while Yuna's been sort of like leading the party around, she's had babysitters the whole time, and it no longer feels like they're her babysitters. It feels like they're her peers. And I really like that, and that's like, I can like get in my feelings about queer history, but that's something that like resonates with me a lot in like how I've been existing as a queer person recently. My roommate Mike and I got dinner with a friend recently. And he's a cis straight white dude. And we were talking about aging, and he was like, you know, I don't really want kids, but I do want to like get married. I want to have a partner. And I very much like feel like time is kind of running out. Right. You know, I'm approaching 30 and it's time to go. And he was, I don't agree with these philosophies. And he was like, he kept making like noises at the concept of 30, and Mike and I were both like, we are so fucking excited to make it to 30. And we said it with this like vehemence that I watched him like get taken aback by the vehemence with which we were excited to reach 30, because it's, for me and Mike, we have never really been at risk of not making it to 30. Like, Mike has had some mental health struggles that have been no good, but ultimately we both have financial safety nets and support networks that mean that we're not at risk for a lot of the things that can end queer folks' lives. However, there are a lot of things that make it so that queer life expectancy has historically been pretty short, so we're very aware of the fact that it's meaningful to make it to 30. And to that each year that we survive and that we are happy is like a victory for us. And so Yuna being able to like become an adult and self-actualize is like very cool to me. And that's one of the reasons why I want that to be the end of the story, rather than being like back to Titus literally in the fetal position.
Yeah, he had to be. He's born again.
Born again.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that ending is very strong, and I don't think it needed 10-2 add anything to the story. But if you do like a pop star treasure hunter AU with, I think, gameplay that's more fun, it is there. Also, side note, I fucking love being in my 30s. I love it.
I'm so stoked.
Like, I have people in my life who are not so fond of being in their 30s, but I'm like, I fucking love being in my 30s. My life is so much better than it was when I was in my 20s. My brain's done. Like, it's done. It's done.
It's done. It's done cooking.
It's yeah. done cooking. It's now fully formed. Love that for it. Like, I don't know. Being in my 30s is great. So I highly recommend it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, I have a lot of trepidation. I wasn't sure I was going to make it to 30 for various yeah. mental health reasons, right? Like, I wasn't sure I would. And especially my early 20s were really bad, really, really, really bad. But as I'm getting older, there's other considerations I have to make. Like, we will not get too much into this, but my parents and I have had to have a lot of conversations about my brother's future. Mm-hmm. And for listeners at home, my brother has classical autism, and so my dad just turned 60, and you know, he's like, he wants to get retired and stuff like that. And thinking about like, how do we make sure my brother has the best possible future has been really, really hard conversations to have. So as I'm getting older, I am like very cognizant of all the things that are limiting in our society for him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I still have a lot of like internal guilt shit that I have to deal with too. Like, you know, so getting to 30, like it's funny because for so long, I had this big Peter Pan complex of like, I don't want to grow up. I can't imagine what that's going to be like. It's terrible. And now that I'm growing up, I'm like, this is amazing. Like, I can finally grow into mm-hmm. who I am. But there feels like there's a lot of baggage there still mm-hmm. that I like have to sit down and deal with. And I'm like, oh no. But I graduated, which means I have to find a new therapist. No.
Oh no.
Oh no.
I love my therapist so much. Yeah. So I'm changing insurance. Like, I have to change on the Gabe's insurance. I have to find a new psychiatrist. I have to find a new therapist. I have to find a new endocrinologist. I'm just like, this is adulting. God, I don't want to deal
miserable.
With.
Miserable.
I hate it.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think that. I don't think that like every part of aging rules, but I do think that no. like the simple fact of getting to is
yeah,
something
no,
that
yeah,
we're celebrating.
Deal. It is. Really, I my early 20s was part of one of the roughest of my life. Mm-hmm. College was really, really bad. I loved college, but it was really, really, I was not in a good place. So it is a real true victory that I'm alive, and I'm really grateful for it.
Yeah. There are definitely things that suck about getting older. Like, if I fall now, I hurt for like 5 days.
Oh, it sucks. It sucks. I hurt my knee like 2 months ago, and every now and then my knee twinges, and I'm like, please, I have one more month left in my 20s. Like, don't do this to me.
There was a moment when I was like, I think 21 or 22, and I like biked all that day. I biked 20 to 30 miles around Pittsburgh.
Holy shit.
Just like going places. And then I got home, and my roommates were like, we're gonna do 1,000 squats. Because our like exercise thing says it's time to do 1,000 squats. You want to join us? And I was like, shit, why not?
Oh, so my God.
And then I like popped up the stairs to the bathroom, and I was brushing my teeth, and I was like, well, it's all downhill from here.
Oh my God.
That is unfathomable.
Yeah.
I was like in the prime of physical health, and I was like, holy shit. Yeah, no, we're not gonna top this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Titus would be proud, I'm sure.
Yeah. Titus would be rooting for you.
It was fun. I miss being that strong, but I'm not like sad about the fact that my life is now such that I don't have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I love Final Fantasy X. I'm glad we got to talk about it.
Yeah.
Sorry you had to spend so much time on it. So
it's okay. I willingly entered into this pact with the devil.
Okay. One thing we didn't talk about that I need to hear about from you, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on it, is that Jekt and Auron fucked. Like,
I
need to hear more about
that. Also, okay, one, they fucked. Celebratory. Two, fuck Jekt. Derogatory.
Yeah, he sucks.
That dude is the worst man on earth. And inexplicably, this disgraced monk who left could never be a leader because he refused the marriage of a priestess daughter or something. Hello, what? Anyway, they were in love, and it ruined Auron's life. And also,
I mean, I can see why.
Jack sucks. If we ever want to do a roundtable on bad dads, which might be a bit dreary, so maybe not, but he would be on. I would vote for
terrible
Jack.
Father.
Sucks.
I do not understand what anybody sees in him.
A true mystery. He's the one with like the symbol on his chest,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Is it his chest hair?
No.
I think he has tattoos.
Okay.
No, it's too big. It's too big.
He has them along his arm and leg too, I think.
Yeah.
I need to look at a picture of Jeff.
Titus's really daddy quick. Issues are like monumental.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about the game is just listening to Titus say my old man and be like so bitter when he says it.
It was so funny in the final cut. This is part of why I loved the end of that game is because Jack is like dying on the floor and Titus is like, I hate you.
I know.
It was so funny. I mean it wasn't, it was actually, it was played pretty straight. I appreciate it a lot. I think that it accurately conveyed Titus's really conflicting emotions about his father, because he is his father and like he really like mm-hmm. up to him, but he also hates him because of the abuse.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard to like have to kill your dad regardless of how you feel about your dad, but also yeah. I'm so glad that they didn't have him be like, even though you did all of this horrible shit to me and permanently fucked up my self-image, I love you, and I'm sorry I just murdered you. Titus was just like, with your dying breath, you will hear me say, fuck you.
Love that.
Oh.
I think my entire life I've been imagining PS2 Jekt. Like that's the one that exists in my memory, and in that I interpreted the symbol on his chest as chest hair.
That's incredible.
That's so vile.
Like he was shaving it into that shape.
Oh my god. So now he's just shaving. Period. Like that man is waxed.
Yes. Yes. So that you can see his sick tattoo.
Oh. Anyway,
on that note, do we have anything else to say about Final Fantasy X?
No, I think that taps me out. I could talk about how bad a dad Jekt is for another hour, but we don't need to go into that.
Yeah, that's a different episode.
He sucks.
Wait, no, I do actually have to say it. I'm so sorry. Part of watching the movie version is that it showed me all of the Jekt spears in a narratively satisfying time, which is like Auron going down memory lane. And Jekt, like, multiple times is like, I'm not going to get to go back and do the only thing I ever wanted to do, which was make my kid into a star, almost a baseball player. Star blitzball player. So why don't I just go fucking die then? God. And I was like, holy shit.
Hate that man.
I hate that man so much.
What a hateable man.
Oh, okay, now I'm done.
And then he's a big monster.
He's just a big monster.
He's a big monster.
Honestly, his most likable form.
Truly.
Truly.
Like, I prefer Sin to Jekt.
Oh yeah.
Jekt is like, it just like doesn't, you know, when Titus is like six and he's like, you're being a crybaby, I'm like, he's six.
He's six.
Are you kidding me? Like, what is wrong with you? Anyway, yeah, he sucks. I hate him.
This is a Jekt hate podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you're not a Jekt hate podcast, what are you doing?
You really got to reanalyze what you think the appropriate role and tone for men to take with their children is.
Truly. Fuck that dude.
Fuck that dude.
Anything else about Final Fantasy X?
Oh, that was it.
Okay, well, that'll do it for us, closing the book on our Final Fantasy X journey. Unless I ever get up the urge to replay 10-2 and actually get to the end. I almost beat it as a teenager, but I stopped because there was a puzzle I didn't know how to solve, and I didn't have the internet. So it just didn't. I never finished it. So, maybe someday I'll get there, but not today, because The Sims Cottage Living is out, and that's all I care about. You can find us online at sidequest.zone. That has all of our great articles about Final Fantasy X and other games. We do sometimes write about other games.
Sometimes.
We do have a lot of articles about Final Fantasy X, though. And Zora has edited many of them. And now
I'll know what the fuck they mean.
Yeah, inevitably, when we get another Final Fantasy X article, you'll understand. Mm-hmm. You'll understand it at a deeper level. Find us at sidequest.zone. We're on Twitter at sidequest.zone. We're just on Twitter at sidequest.zone. I'm on Twitter at Melissa Brinks. I use Twitter to fire off one thought and then disappear. So keep that in mind.
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Jamsternazzy, where I'm mostly doing book promo at this point, and that's been my life for another year. So sorry.
Cool.
And I'm on Twitter at ZH Gilbert. I don't remember what the last thing I tweeted was. It's a toss-up. You'll find out.
What was the last thing I tweeted? Now I want to know. Anyway, thank you to Alexander Nakarada for the use of our theme song, Base The, which we use under Creative Commons Zero License. You can join our Discord if that's a thing mm-hmm. you want to do.
You can see my entire live blog of Final Fantasy X.
All about how Jekt...
It's mostly about how Jekt and Auron fucked, and also what a bad dad Jekt is.
I mean, you're right.
Quality though. Content.
So that's it for today. Go take a nap. You have to.
That I'll say in a moment. I need to let my cat in my room. She's howling outside. Which usually means she needs to pee.
Apparently intend to. I also watched The Perfect Ending. And you have a choice. Like, without also spoiling it, you have a choice, which I think is interesting. So that's why I kind of want to watch it to see how it leads up to that. But I agree that it kind of, it does do things to the ending of 10.
Yeah.
That's just vague. Vaguely what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, there's no way in hell I would ever get the perfect ending in Final Fantasy X 2. It's way too much work. And it's like weird shit too. Like, oh, you have to talk to the person in the Moogle costume at the very beginning of the game. If you don't do it, no perfect ending for you.
Oh, that's dumb. Also, I just sat back down because Spot does indeed need to pay.
Oh, I hate that. I always find that really frustrating in games where it's just like, or you can't do a thing unless you like do very, very specific, like trying to get like Liliana not to be hardened in Inquisition. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to make her kill the person at the very, very beginning.
That feels a little bit more connected conceptually.
It does, but I didn't know that was the one choice I had. Maybe I should have with the Bioware game, but
this is Final Fantasy VII, also fucking the remake also does this, where like to get certain scenes with Tifa versus Aerith, you have to like choose to not do swaths of game content. Or it's like, if you want to be with Tifa in a certain scene, you have to just like not do any side quests.
Why?
Anyway,
interesting.
That's not the point. And also, I missed like a full minute and a half of conversation.
It's okay. We were talking about Final Fantasy X too. So.
Oh great. We were talking about the ending before that.
Yeah, I love. Did we lose Zora?
Oh no.
Hold on. Hello. Am I back?
There
Hello.
You are. Okay. There you are.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Anyway, there was a long pause, and I was like, I guess Zora did not like this kid.
There was a long pause. There was very much a long pause.